Good morning. Can everybody hear me? All right, good. I was worried about making the lapel cooperate. It works perfectly for Elliot every time, and I figured I was going to come up here and start talking, and everyone's going to go, can't hear you at all. But it's a pleasure to have everyone here this morning. It's certainly a good day to worship our God together. Before we get started, I wanted to do this because I really appreciate this verse. Psalm 103, verse 12 is our family devotional verse, memory verse. As far as the east is from the west, so far does he remove our transgressions from us. Such an excellent reminder for us this month. You know, we are blessed on this Lord's Day. I am thankful to be able to come in here and worship my God. I consider it an amazing refresher. I don't know if you get that feeling too, because sometimes the week can be a little bit disastrous, and it's good to come in here and worship with my church family. It's good to fill my cup. It's good to rest with the saints. Have you ever heard of this book? This book was written in 1972. Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. You can tell about how his mentality is going through the day, can't you? You know, sometimes in our lives, we get those kinds of days. You know, you go through this book and you read about Alexander's day and you find out that he is struggling with things like gum in his hair. He is struggling because his friend got a secret agent ring in his cereal box and Alexander didn't get anything in his. Or maybe he didn't even get the window seat in the car. Now that one I actually relate to a little bit when I was younger. All these things are a little silly, but they represent a day that could be disastrous. Remember what we talked about right before we got started this morning? Imagine if we had a truth serum. Hey, how's your day? Well, my kids are in trouble. Hey, how's your day? The doctor just got back with the news and it's not looking good at all. Hey, how's your day? And then something is hitting us so incredibly hard. You know, this book is about silly things. But sometimes we have a day like this where everything seems to be falling down around you. Nothing is going right. I had one of those days a few weeks back, and if anything could have went wrong that day, it did. I mean, I started the day late. I missed a few things that I needed to do. I heard from family about some disasters happening, and I even took the wrong road to work and got there late. Could have been a lot worse. God has blessed me. But sometimes we have days where we can't imagine things getting any worse. Makes you just want to rip your hair out. I don't like those types of days because they cause me stress. I don't like those days because sometimes I just feel a little hopeless. This morning, we're going to be looking at Luke chapter 8. In Luke chapter 8, there's a story where Jesus meets with a man and he's got his apostles with him. And it seems like one of those days for the apostles. It seems like it's a day that just keeps getting better. You ever have one of those where things are just, they keep happening. You're like, how is this day going to get any better? In our own lives, when there's a rough day, it can make it easy to get discouraged. It can make it easy to just throw your hands in the air and say, forget it. It can even encourage us to start blaming God for what has happened. And yet, even in a rough day like that, we need to be able to turn to Jesus and listen to him above all else. They're going to meet a man that I would describe as being in shambles. He is completely hopeless. He is without a chance in the world. And even the apostles seem to be having a rough day as well. It was almost comical the way it was going downhill. And that's the kind of day where we have a choice. Do we double down? Do we cling to Jesus all the more? Or do we just throw in the towel? So let's start with the day the apostles had, beginning on the Sea of Galilee. They're crossing the Sea of Galilee and a storm hits. It says there in verse 22 and following, it says, one day he got into a boat with his disciples and he said to them, let us go across to the other side of the lake. So they set out, and as they sailed, he fell asleep. And a windstorm came down on the lake, and they were filling with water and were in danger. Not exactly an ideal start to the day, would you agree? Now, when the boat you're in starts filling with water, that's my moment to go, hey, maybe things could be going a little better. You know, you keep going, and it says, and they went and woke him, saying, Master, Master, we are perishing. I don't have a lot of experience with boats. I love kayaking, but as far as sailing is concerned, I've had limited experience with that. But one thing I know is when the sailors start panicking, that's when you need to turn around. The best comparison I have is Sarah's grandfather, Alan Lamb. He has been sailing for longer than I've been alive with excess. It's like if I was to get on a boat with him and all of a sudden he gets nervous, I don't even know what's going on. And if he gets nervous, I'm like, wait, what? What's going on? That's the kind of situation they're in. These guys are fishermen. They've been doing this for a while. They are sailors. They shouldn't be panicked. And yet the boat is filling with water. And the day just keeps getting better. It says, and he awoke and rebuked the wind and the raging waves, and they ceased, and there was a calm. You see, Jesus is the one that can control the elements themselves. He has incredible power. He's the Son of God. He uses it right here to calm the storms, and now everything should be good, right? Stormy weather, boat filling with water, calmness, now we're fine. Except Jesus reacts to the apostles. It says there in verse 25, where is your faith? And they were afraid and they marveled, saying to one another, who then is this that he commands even the winds and water, and they obey him? Imagine being in the same boat as the one who completely makes a storm disappear by his words. You know, Mark, when he was recording this in chapter 4, he says they were filled with a great fear. They went from fearing the storm to fearing this man. He has control over everything. They shouldn't be afraid of him, and yet they are, and it keeps getting better. Remember that day that we talked about with Alexander? They go from being on a boat scared of the storm to being on this boat scared of the Son of God, and now they finally get to where they're going. Has anyone in here ever seen the movie Pacifier with Vin Diesel? I love that movie, guilty confession there. But he is teaching the kids, the older teen girl to drive. And on the first runaround, it doesn't go well. You know, they get to the school and her sister gets out of the car and yells, land, land. And she kisses the ground. She's so excited to be on the land. And of course, the teen girl, she takes it in stride. She goes, ha ha, very dramatic. But that's kind of how I imagine the apostles being at this point. They have been in a storm. Their boat is filling with water. They are actually scared to death. And then, even worse than that, someone with power over the elements themselves is questioning them about their faith. They finally land, and I can just imagine relief. Okay, now the day is going to get better. Kinda. Because if you look at verse 27, you find out where they landed. When Jesus had stepped out on land, there met a man from the city who had demons. For a long time he had worn no clothes, and he had not lived in a house but among the tombs. So where are they? Are they at a nice, comfy home, or are they in a cemetery? What is the one place I wouldn't really care to be, where I certainly wouldn't want to kiss the ground and be so relieved that I'm there? A cemetery, and that's exactly where they're at. It says in Mark chapter 5, it's also mirroring this story, immediately there met him out of the tombs, a man with an unclean spirit. They go from one disaster to the next, to the next. The day just keeps getting better. But let me ask you this, what's worse than a cemetery or being among the tombs? A haunted one, one with a person plagued by demons and unclean spirits. See, the apostles are having a pretty rough day at this point. But we need to have pity on the man for sure as well. Mark describes his predicament as being naked, broken out of his shackles, crying out night and day, cutting himself with stones. In all seriousness, that's a horrific thing to have to deal with. But it keeps getting better than that. Because what's worse than one demon? Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. Now, at this point, it's getting a little bit much. Go from the storm to almost sinking, to being questioned by the Son of God, to being on land in a cemetery, a haunted one with a guy struggling with a demon. No, many demons. By this point, I would be kind of nervous as the apostles. What else is going to hit us today? How could this day get any worse? And that's the moment when you have to listen to Jesus. In our own lives, we're going to go through that exact scenario. We're going to have a day where something hits us time after time after time till you don't know where to turn. How is this day going to get any worse? And listening to Jesus becomes of vital importance, especially through the struggles. Reading through his word and getting strength from that, listening to his words and obeying that even when things are hard, that's what really matters. Do you listen to Jesus no matter what? Now, in this story, things do seem to start turning around. You see, even when the day is rough, even when it's falling apart for the apostles, they cling to Jesus. They listen to him. They follow him. And that's how we need to do it. And what does Jesus do in this story? He does what Jesus always does. He cares for people and he heals them of their troubles, both physical and spiritual. He's dealing with the demon-possessed man now. It says there in verses 31 and 32, and they begged him not to command them to depart into the abyss. Now, a large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him to let them enter these, so he gave them permission. It says, then the demons came out of the man, and they entered the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and drowned. It's kind of interesting that the demons recognize who Jesus is better than a lot of people that meet him on a day-to-day basis. Scripture tells us that the demons believe and tremble, rightfully so, because they know who he is. They know the power he has. He has control of the elements. He has control over everything. And what does he do with that power? He heals this man that needs it desperately. He removes the demons in quite a spectacular way. Do you think the herdsmen are ever going to forget that? Do you think they ever forgot it as long as they lived when they witnessed what happened? Nope. In fact, they run into the city to explain what happened. Take a look at verses 34 and 35. It says, when the herdsmen saw what happened, they fled and told it in the city and in the country. Then people went out to see what happened, and they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had gone, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. I'm actually going to stop there for a second. So the guy that his life was ruined, he's now sitting there just calmly talking, in his right mind, no more screaming, no more breaking of chains, no more moaning, no more cutting himself, just a calm, normal person now. Jesus used his power to give this man hope. And that's what he does for us. Before this man is a... he had nothing. And after Jesus, he's now receptive to the gospel. This is a great thing. This is pretty awesome. So how do you think everyone responds to the good news that this man is healed? The rest of verse 35 says, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it had told them how the demon-possessed man had been healed. You would think that once they start listening to Jesus, you would think once they're around him, things are going to go so much better. And they did, and yet fear is still there. This has been a rough day for the apostles. It was a rough day for the demon-possessed man until he got healed. He has his life back. Everything should be falling into place, and yet the people were afraid. Instead of praising God, everyone's scared. They're panicked. They run into the city. They're seized with great fear. Verse 37 says, then all the people in the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked him to depart from them, for they were seized with a great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. Imagine being so afraid of the Son of God that you tell him, you got to go. You've got to get out of here. So instead of listening to Jesus, instead of clinging closer to him, they try to push him away because of their fear. We can't let our fears get in the way of listening to Jesus Christ. There's a lot of fear in the passage. The apostles were fearful multiple times. The demons were fearful of who Jesus really was, and even the crowd that should have been pleased, that should have been overjoyed that someone is finally healed that's been plaguing their cemetery, they feared Jesus and wanted him gone. Let me ask you, is that your mindset? When the fears start piling on, do you want to do things yourself? Because if Jesus is gone, I can do what I want. If Jesus is gone, I can focus on my desires and my wants, and I can try to handle things myself. Let me ask you, when's the last time you handling yourself went well? I can speak for myself in this matter. Me trying to deal with things on my own leads to quite the mess. You know, we deal with prayer as almost a lifeline. If anyone's ever seen Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I love that show. But we end up treating it like one of the guys on there where he went through the whole thing and never once phoned a friend. Actually, I think on the $1 million question, he phoned his father and said, hey, I don't need you. I just wanted to tell you I want $1 million. See, final answer. And I think me and my grandma were watching it and we both went shocked. We treat prayer like that. We don't use it at all. Until the last possible second. But rather than it being a lifeline, why not let it be daily communication with your Father? Instead of letting your fears control you, instead focus all the more on Jesus. We never let fear get in the way of following God. When things may not work out, when we're afraid of that, that's when we trust in God all the more. When the worries of the world, and there are a lot, when they get you down, he is the one who provides peace. You know, one man in this story did not let fear stop him. He didn't want to let Jesus go, in fact. Luke 8:38. It says, the man from whom the demons had gone begged that he might be with him. He wanted to cling to Jesus. He wanted to be with him. Seeing what Jesus did made this man a believer. When Jesus changes your life, you want to follow him. But notice how Jesus responds. Jesus sent him away saying, return to your home and declare how much God has done for you. Imagine saying, I want to be with you, Jesus, right now. And Jesus says, no, you have things to do. Go back home and tell people. The man needed to share what had happened to him. He needed to tell the world about a man with demons among the tombs. He needed to tell the world about living there and not being in his right mind. And he needed to tell the world about the Jesus who changed everything. And so what did the man choose to do? He went away, proclaiming throughout the whole city how much Jesus had done for him. He went away obeying Jesus Christ. Mark says the Decapolis, the 10 cities, he went through the entire region sharing who Jesus is, sharing what Jesus had done for him. And that, if you notice, went against what he wanted. Remember what he wanted to do? Jesus, take me with you. Let me go with you. He wanted to be with Christ, and Jesus told him no. Despite everything that happened to him, despite the life that he had had, despite his desire to be with Jesus right at that moment, he instead chose to listen to Jesus. How would you choose to respond? You know, our desires are a rather fickle thing, pretty dangerous, really, because we want what we want. I mean, there's even commercials about it, right? It's my money and I want it now. Desires get in the way a lot. They cause us to not do what we need to do, instead what we just want. And sometimes listening to Jesus means letting those desires go. Like with this demon-possessed man. You know, that can be quite hard. But it's got to be done. And so when it comes to listening to Jesus, sometimes it's good to overcome the struggles because Jesus helps with those struggles. You know, it's good to listen to Jesus when you got fears because he alleviates those fears. But when you listen to Jesus, even over your own desires, that's when the conflict can hit inside. Because you think, well, I kind of want to do my own thing. I kind of want to chase after my own desires and dreams and goals. And I want to make my own choices. And sometimes those choices are rather poor. And Jesus says, you have no business doing that. So you have to make the choice. How badly do you want to listen to Jesus? So as we close this morning, there's a question to consider. Do we listen to Jesus? Sometimes the day is so rough. Sometimes it's like Alexander's day. But I kind of connect with the demon-possessed man. I can connect with that. I want to be with Jesus right now. If there was a bus out there headed to heaven, I may knock over a few people headed to it. And I apologize for that. I'm not at all like little Johnny, if you've ever heard of him. He was in Sunday school class or Bible hour, and the teacher's like, all right, guys, who in here wants to go to heaven? You know, everybody raised their hand except for him. And after class, she was a little concerned. She's like, well, Johnny, don't you want to go to heaven? He's like, oh, yes, ma'am. I just thought you were talking about right now. I'm not at all like that. Sign me up today. And yet, Jesus says no. Jesus, in fact, says no, not yet. You have work to do. You need to share me with the world. You need to overcome your struggles and tell people about me. You need to deal with your fears, and I will help you do it. And you need to show people what it means to live as a Christian. And even if you want me now or want something in your life, you're going to have to let that go and instead listen to me. How badly do you want to listen to Jesus? How badly do you want to commit to him? Jesus says we have work to do. And that work may involve yourself. I know it involves me pretty regularly. You overcome your struggles. You work for Christ. You deal with your fears and you get comfort from him. And you even let your desires go in favor of the one who really matters. We have a Savior whose words lead to life, and we need to listen to him above all else. Now, we're going to sing a song of invitation in a moment, but perhaps you need prayers this morning. Maybe you have a day exactly like Alexander. Maybe the struggles are just hitting over and over and over again till the point where you just don't know where to go from here. Prayers can help you stay faithful. Maybe you've got a lot of fear. Maybe there's fears about what you need to do in this life, fears about the future, fears about your children, fears about all kinds of things that are an obstacle to you listening to him. As a church family, we'd love to pray for you concerning that. Or maybe you have to ask yourself if your desires are lining up with what Christ wants for you. Maybe it's time to put on Christ in baptism and truly start listening to him. And so we're going to sing a song of invitation this morning. Please come as we sing together.
Just as I am.